sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in a World Series.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series!
You are Locked On Cubs, your daily Chicago Cubs podcast.
But we didn't come here to drink beer! We came here to win this ballgame!
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I said to the Uber boy, I said, take me out with the crowd!
What's going on, Cubs fans? You are listening to Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. I'm your host, Sean Sears, and on today's episode, I'm joined by Ryan Davis, who helps us break down this Theo Epstein exit, what it could mean for the future. We talk a little bit about what Jed Hoyer's task is now that he's kind of having to pick up somewhat of these pieces that Theo Epstein's leaving behind as the Cubs front office is making this change, while the roster itself has a lot of questions to be answered with and a direction really overall to be picked. So Ryan and I diagnose a little bit of this decision, why it could be coming now as opposed to maybe not a few months ago, and what it could mean for Jed Hoyer and this roster itself, who we could see leave. And then we also just talk about Theo Epstein, because it's a sad day that Epstein's leaving the team, but there's also plenty of great things Epstein did, obviously, and we highlight some of the good, some of the bad, and some of our favorite memories of Theo Epstein. So before we get started, though, make sure if you have not, you're subscribed to Locked On Cubs on whatever podcast app you use, whether that's Spotify, Apple, TuneIn app, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Make sure you subscribe, leave a 5-star review, and then make sure you follow us on Twitter at Locked On Cubs. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean R. Sears, and you can follow Ryan on Twitter at Ryan Q. Davis. But with that, here is our interview with Ryan Davis as we say goodbye to Theo Epstein. What's going on, Cubs fans? You're listening to Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. I am your host, Sean Sears. I'm joined with me today with my co-host, Ryan Davis, and we are talking about Theo Epstein. He has left this team. He is no longer the president of baseball operations as of Friday. Jed Hoyer is taking over that position. So we are bringing on Ryan to get his thoughts on kind of this crazy move. But I guess before we dive into that, how are you doing today, Ryan?
Oh, I could be better, but you know, I'm mostly that I'm missing Theo Epstein already.
Right. It's going to be tough to, I mean, I know like immediately during that press conference, they were like trying to pretty much mainly just highlight Jed and how good of a person he is and a good fit. And that's awesome. But it's hard to feel happy about your team when probably the biggest reason for success over the last decade is leaving, and leaving a year earlier than we thought. But I guess when this news came out, what was your initial reaction? Were you surprised by it? Were you kind of like, yeah, this makes sense? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised that it actually happened. I didn't think, after they had that kind of end of year press conference, sort of after David Kaplan had broken the news that Theo Epstein may not be around long term, I felt like they did a good enough job throwing cold water on that at that press conference and made it seem like that wasn't in the plan. I don't know if that was just, if it was in the plan at that point or if something changed, but I had kind of gone about after that moment in time, assuming, okay, Epstein has made it pretty clear he's going to be here through the end of this year.
Right.
So it does make me wonder if something changed and they said, you know what, maybe it is time for me to go, or if that was always kind of something they were working towards and just keeping it under their hat. So that was my first thought, was that David Kaplan maybe was right about that. And
I know
he's been given some proper credit. Obviously, he does have some pretty good sources inside that front office, and I think he's pretty close to Theo. So it doesn't shock me that he may have nailed that one when other people were not quite getting the same info. But the other aspect of it that I think is interesting is, you know, why would he leave with a year remaining? What is the motivation there? And I think we had probably talked about it, and I'd made arguments to people who said, man, the Cubs are just going to blow everything up this offseason. They're going to start rebuilding again. And I'd say, slow down. You know, like, I know that Tom Ricketts is playing the poor card and that they don't have enough money to afford having a reasonable payroll and all that, but I don't think they're going to trade off everybody and non-tender Chris Bryant or anything crazy like that. But now, and I said, the only reason that it makes me believe that they wouldn't do that is, why would Theo Epstein stick around for another year if that's what he was going to be doing, is turning over the roster? Wouldn't he just hand the reins to Jed Hoyer now if that's what the plan was? And so that's what makes me kind of uneasy moving forward, is now I have every reason to believe that if Theo Epstein's walking away, I think it's because they're planning to kind of blow this up, and that's kind of sad.
You highlighted exactly the two questions I had that I talked about yesterday in my podcast. Nailed it exactly. I was wondering, the biggest thing was like, why would Theo make this move? And like you said, he's not a guy that's going to come in and help basically rebuild the club. Like, if he's sticking around, it's because the Cubs are going to give it another go. And, you know, what exactly does that mean? We don't really know, and we probably won't know ever now. Obviously he's gone, but you know, we assumed at least there would be some small movements. But if Theo was still around, the majority of this team would probably still be here, assuming they found a way to maybe upgrade a few spots or pieces. But now that he's gone, it makes it really easy. I mean, not really easy for Jed Hoyer, but it makes it a lot easier for, I guess, to just convey that message collectively that the Cubs are maybe taking a step back, maybe looking into what options they have in front of them to really improve for the future, more so than they were looking at 2021. But it does make me think, like, why did they put Theo Epstein up on this up at the end of the season press conference almost a month ago now, if the plan was Theo leaves early. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It was for me, at least, I was surprised to hear that it happened now and not happened later in the season, but I was in the same boat as you. I thought, like, after that conference, I was like, okay, well, he's going to be here. He's at least sticking around. I could see maybe if the Cubs were awful at the trade deadline, maybe he just, you know, says, all right, you know, you take care of me here, tie a few bows, and he leaves then. But yeah, it's hard not to look at this team now and think, like, okay, well, it's kind of like, why wouldn't you at least now maybe blow this up if you really aren't too many options in front of you?
Right. And he said that this was something that became apparent in the summer. And again, why now on, you know, whatever it was, November 17th?
Yeah.
why make that announcement now versus at the end of the year press conference when those rumors were out there? You know, why, what's keeping on an extra month or so, like you said, what changed? What was the purpose? That may be something that we never get an answer to, and maybe that we're digging into something that there's really nothing there, and that maybe this was the plan all along and nothing changed. But mm-hmm. It does make me wonder. And maybe it's just that Theo wanted some reassurances that the $10 million he was going to make would get funneled into the budget. That could have been it as well. If I'm Theo Epstein, you know, maybe I say, hey, I will walk away from that final year, but I want to make sure Jed gets that $10 million to spend. To give this team and my people every chance to be competitive. And if Tom Ricketts says, well, if you walk away, I'm pocketing that $10 million because I'm poor.
So poor.
Maybe, if I'm Theo, maybe I say, then I'm just not going to walk away. If it's not going to help anybody for me to leave, I'm just going to stick around and get my money. And it just seemed like Gordon Whitmer asked the question about that money at mm-hmm. the press conference. And I saw a bunch of the other writers like Jordan Bastian and a few others kind of tweet about Tom Ricketts' response that the money stays with baseball ops and all that. I didn't read his response that same way. I mean, he said that the money would stay in baseball operations, but it just seemed non-committal. He didn't want to just come out and say,
right,
yes, that money will be spent on personnel and all this, that is money that can now be allocated that way. It seemed like Tom was trying to dodge saying that, which isn't surprising. And maybe I'm reading too much into it, knowing, you know, kind of how he handles these things. But how was your take on that? What did you see when that question was asked?
Yeah, well, I thought it was telling that he's like, oh, is that for me? Because that's what he said in front of every question that was clearly gauged to him. But yeah, no, I picked up on some of that stuff too. I always kind of look at Tom Ricketts in that way, so I didn't really think too much of it in that moment. But now that you're saying it, I did think that. And I just kind of brushed it off to myself as like, he's probably going to just do that with everything. And he kind of did, basically teeter totter, especially when they started asking him about like questions about Jed. He's like, well, I don't want to put words in his mouth and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, it's never stopped you before, but sure. Okay. yeah, I read that as kind of like, that was not a yes.
Yeah.
That was not yes. That was probably, yeah. But who knows?
At the very least, that was my takeaway was it's not as clear as I think some of the beat writers made it seem from the response. It wasn't right. as clear to me that yes, that money that they're saving will go into, you know, $10 million more that they could spend on this roster. I feel like when Tom Ricketts says, oh, well, that'll stay with baseball operations, what he could be saying is, well, that's $10 million less in the red on this line item now.
Right.
So I don't think that means necessarily that, you know, that's more money to improve the team for next year.
Right.
Unfortunately. Or does it mean the difference between we have to non-tender Chris Bryant versus now we can tender Chris Bryant a contract? I don't know.
It'd be nice.
Yeah, but if there's, I mean, there was a thing out there the other day that some anonymous executive said that Chris Bryant wouldn't get $18 million for 1 year on a free agent deal right now, which I think is kind of ludicrous.
Yeah.
You know, based on one very short injury filled season. The guy was very good in 2019. So, yeah, that seems insane for a guy who's what, like 28, 27, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's this whole thing is a mess, unfortunately. And then I bounce back and forth. I have the Theo Epstein first coming in and starting the rebuild. I have that same kind of tingle of excitement, thinking mm-hmm. like, you know, if they trade some of these guys and get prospects and maybe, you know, keep a few guys around and sign them long term, like maybe Javier Baez or Wilson Contreras. And then build around those guys while adding in some younger players. You know, maybe we get a refresh that allows them to be competing for a championship in 2022. That'd be cool. If they could really make the organization a bit healthier. But as much as we love Theo Epstein and acknowledge what he did with the Cubs as historic, he's not leaving them in the best situation either. So,
no.
It's not quite as dire as when he arrived in 2012, but you know, they've got very little in the farm system like they had then. They have some guys making more money who aren't producing at that level. They have some budgetary constraints like they did at that time. So for all of Epstein's successes, which I know we're going to talk about soon, there were mm-hmm. some kind of major failures that make me think how, you know, I don't know how good I feel about the Jed Hoyer regime. I think they need to bring in somebody from outside to get some good outside perspective for that GM job.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I like Jed Hoyer. There's never been a moment where I'm like, yeah, okay. You know, I didn't like that move by Jed Hoyer. I didn't like that comment from Jed Hoyer, but I also don't know what was Jed and what was Theo and what Theo pushed on. It was nice to hear that. And who knows, this could be Epstein just trying to upsell on or play up Jed as a president of baseball ops guy, but he did say that, you know, Jed was the guy that pushed hard for Pedro Strop, that he was the one that really said like, we need to get this guy and add him into the Jake Arrieta deal. And obviously a big pickup. We love Pedro Strop, and he's been a huge part of this team, or had been a huge part of the team, you know, since he came up, really. So like
I was gonna add to that, one thing we do know about Jed Hoyer is, wasn't he the one in charge in Boston when Theo had that, what was it, contract dispute where he was no longer with the team for a while? Wasn't Jed the one in charge when they made the Josh Beckett and Mike Lowell trade?
Oh, yeah, he was. Yeah. Wow, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was Jed Hoyer.
Yeah, that wasn't Theo. He doesn't get credit for that one. That was Jed, I'm pretty sure. So, yeah, I mean, we do know a little bit about him, and I'm not trying to say that I think Jed and Theo are a monolith and that it's just a continuation of the Theo Epstein era. I hope that it's not, not that, again, we can complain about a bunch of trips to the playoffs and, you know, winning records basically every year since 2015. That's all major progress for the Cubs and obviously the World Series. But, you know, some of the things that they've been doing lately just aren't working. And
right.
outside voices are really going to help, I think, moving forward is, you know, getting some more of those things. Yeah, I saw that little video that's out there now about Theo Epstein TPing Jed Hoyer's house.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who it was. I think it may have been Full Count Tommy on Twitter retweeted that video with a comment, they need to hire somebody from outside as a GM. That was like the perfect way of viewing that. I thought the looking at it through that prism is exactly correct.
That's really funny. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's, I think that'll be a key part, because we don't really know what differentiates Jed from Theo. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever, and they're improved now and more delicious than ever with 6 new flavors to add to their already 18 amazing flavors, being caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry baraka, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp. Some delicious flavors to go along with their coconut almond, raspberry, German chocolate, peanut butter, mint brownie's actually my favorite, double chocolate, orange, toffee, coconut, peanut butter brownie, all those flavors. Bars are covered in 100% chocolate, easy, soft to chew. Some of the best tasting bars I've had. But on top of that, the Built Bar is healthy. It's great for health conscious people like myself who are trying to lose weight or, you know, work out and still try and keep eating something good for you, but that is low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. It's great for keto diets. It's a ton of just great options you can have while you're working out, while you're trying to eat a little bit healthier. Those are things Built Bar is built for. But I think one of my favorites is the cookies and cream. It's got 17 grams of protein, 130 calories, just 4 grams of sugar and 4 grams of net carb. I'm not very a super health conscious person myself. I like cookies and cream. I like stuff that tastes good, but I'm definitely trying to look for stuff to snack on throughout the day. Built Bar's been great because obviously, first off, they sent me some bars immediately when they first started partnering with Locked On, and they're delicious. But it's nice to have something that I can eat on and chew throughout the day that isn't like, you know, Goldfish, something bad for me, pop, sugar, all this stuff that I'm probably, you know, constantly distracted with my refrigerator being directly behind me at my desk in my apartment. Having Built Bar here has helped me honestly lose a little bit of weight while I've been in quarantine, and it's honestly encouraged me to try and work out a little bit more. But right now, Built Bar has reset their promo code and is now offering a free cooler with purchase. So while supplies last, there's only about a week or so left in this, so obviously place your order soon, but go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your next order. Once again, that's promo code LOCKDOWN for $10 off at BuiltBar.com, the best tasting protein bar you will ever have. Theo Epstein, obviously, leaving the Cubs. We've got, you know, 9 years of working with Tom Ricketts now. What do you think his opinion of Tom Ricketts is? I know we won't want to necessarily, like, assume anything or whatnot, but I've never been able to get a read on Epstein on it. He obviously is very good in those interviews, and even when Tom was talking, I was trying to stare down Epstein just to get maybe like a smirk or something from him. He was on the ball with it entirely. But what do you think his thoughts were on playing with a guy like or working with a guy like Ricketts? And do you think that maybe factored into his decision?
I don't know. I don't think so. Epstein's been pretty upfront and transparent about a lot of how he feels about things. And he won't say, at least in my experience, I haven't seen him directly say something that he knows isn't true. If he's trying to hide something, you can tell. You know, you'll tell that Theo Epstein feels one way but just won't say it. And when he was talking about Tom Ricketts at the press conference yesterday, the main thing that he said about him was that he liked working with him and that they became friends. So that makes me feel like if he calls him a friend publicly at the press conference, then he's probably not harboring these deep-seated, like, screw this guy kind of feelings.
Yeah.
That's where I am with it. I kind of wondered as well how much Tom Ricketts and some of the stuff that's gone on behind the scenes financially with the Cubs kind of played into Theo Epstein saying, okay, basically I'm done now. But I don't know if there was any kind of animosity like a lot of fans might read into it. I think it was the right time and the right decision because of the direction that they were going to be going.
Yeah, that's what I feel too. But I know you've encountered our friend Ricketts a few times, and you know, shared some thoughts with each other.
I would not describe Tom as one of my friends.
really? Yeah. You guys seem so close. He and had such great constructive criticism for you.
Yeah, I would not describe him as one of my friends. The offer still stands for him to do a follow up on that article I wrote a couple of years back, but he never responded to my emails. I don't know why.
We are obviously talking through this kind of, I mean, a massive change for the Cubs that Theo Epstein's stepping down, but obviously it's also a time to look back a little bit. Theo's had a ton of successful moments with the Cubs. We've the last few years harped heavily on some of the shortcomings, and that's a bummer. But obviously Theo Epstein's done a lot of great things. I guess what are some of the traits that come to mind for you, Ryan, where you think that Theo Epstein absolutely nailed this move?
Oh, I think the biggest one probably lands number one on my list is signing John Lester. I think that was just a moment that changed the course of Cubs history in a big way. He was the perfect guy for that team at that time. And you got basically everything you wanted out of him. I mean, he had a few down years, but by and large, he showed up in the playoffs in a big way. And you know, that's what they signed him to do, was to carry them into the playoffs, and he did. And Lester was just absolute nails in the World Series and in the 2016 playoffs specifically. So yeah, there's so many games that Lester pitched that have just, even to the point where it started to slip your mind, like you forget about all these great performances. Even his 2018 wild card game, I think he threw 6 shutout innings. So yeah, that's probably number one for me. It took them from a promising young team with prospects coming up that nobody really knew what they would do in 2015 to, okay, now we've got Jake Arrieta and John Lester at the top of our rotation. You know, that's, you know, two studs that you can rely on along with this young offense. It really legitimized what they were doing. So John Lester, I still remember waking up that next morning, checking my phone and finding out that they had agreed to that deal and being so excited. That's my number one. What about you?
The John Lester one's definitely up there. I remember that being such a massive signing because we hadn't like signed a big free agent since Soriano, you know, and even then, like, that was so bad. it got really bad towards the end, obviously, but we hadn't really gone after a big guy. And then to get John Lester, who had kind of like him and David Price, I felt like were the guys that people had envisioned being added to this Cubs team at some point once they were good because of all the young guys they had and where timing would line up for those guys coming up to the roster. So that was definitely up there for me. I would say another pretty big trade, obviously the Nick Castellanos deal was massive, and you know, it sucks that he came onto this team with a group that just, man, they just crumbled at the end. It was just so hard to watch. And I know we just lambasted these guys, but Nick Castellanos deserved everything he got in terms of the fan recognition, all of that, being on radio shows left and right. I'll always remember that picture of him sitting up on the dugout after the last game at Wrigley in 2019 and thinking like, man, it would be so cool to keep this guy long term. But that was a massive trade. I would say another big move for me was obviously the Dexter Fowler move, not even the second time coming back, but that trade that they did with Houston, that was a great move. they flipped Luis Valbuena.
Yeah, rest in peace. They traded Cubs legend Luis Valbuena for Dexter Fowler, and it worked out really well, obviously. When you talk about Castellanos, I think that's an overlooked one because it didn't lead to a postseason. But Castellanos was absolutely fantastic, and I don't think they gave up much to get him. So that was just like a good Theo Epstein move that I think just, you know, went under the radar because obviously, again, that he left after the year and they didn't make the playoffs. So it's easy to forget about. But, you know, in a vacuum, that move did exactly what it was supposed to do. You brought in a guy who just absolutely crushed the ball for his time with the Cubs, and they gave up practically nothing. So that's a good one. I think the big one that we're probably dancing around is the Jake Arrieta, Pedro Strop move. I still remember a friend of mine at the time texted me and was just so angry that they gave up Steve Clevenger in that deal.
Steve Clevenger. Oh my God. People were upset they traded Scott Feldman. Ugh.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll admit it, when that trade went down, I felt like in previous years they had gotten better returns for guys like Matt Garza and Paul Mahalem and Ryan Dempster. And when I saw that what they got for Scott Feldman was Jake Arrieta and Pedro Strop, I was kind of underwhelmed. I was kind of like, okay, so guys who've already been in the big leagues, we're not talking about legitimate prospects here. Arrieta's big league career has been unremarkable. Strop, I was like, okay, maybe this guy's, you know, got a future as a reliever. He's got a down year, but he's pitched well before. So maybe we get a reliever out of this. But you know, at the time I was kind of like, yeah, it's fine. That trade's okay. I know this Arrieta guy's got some decent stuff. Maybe they can turn him into a number four starter. So yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody except for the Cubs knew what they were doing, and that one was a total heist.
Yeah, that was insane. that deal happened the way it did, and the way the Cubs benefited from that was just an absolute nonsense, crazy deal. kudos to them for. I mean, like, there's no way the Cubs expected to get a Cy Young winner and obviously a perennial, you know, eighth inning guy for the next 5+ years. Like, that's nuts.
Yeah.
But the one thing I will say about that trade is it did like cement the Theo Epstein is a god and he will get whatever he wants from a trade. And people like did kind of put Epstein up on that pedestal a little bit and compared all the other trades to that. So like everything did look a little bit worse. But I mean, like, man, you hit a slam dunk and a home run at once. Like, it's not possible, but Theo Epstein did it. So,
yeah.
I guess we could touch on some of the bad things Theo Epstein did. What's one move that you look back now that it doesn't have to be one of the big moves, but what's a move now that you look back now on and you're just like, well, what happened here?
Well, before I get to it, I should say, I think that exactly what you were just talking about kind of set this expectation that Epstein and his front office in general was, so good at that. You know, finding those guys, the Kyle Hendricks deal is another example. Mm-hmm. When obviously there's skill involved, but you know, if everything had fallen just a little bit differently, you know, Jed had to bang the table to get Pedro Strop involved in that deal. And the Ryan Dempster trade originally was for, was it Armando Galarraga or some, was, is that who it was?
I think Aroldis Vizcaino.
It was a starting pitcher, I know, and I think it was with the Braves. I don't remember exactly who it was, but it was somebody not all that good who didn't end up with a great career. And because Ryan,
was it?
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm trying to remember. No, I was going to say Julio Teheran, but that's not the move.
That's either. Not who it, I was. Who it was. Yeah. I thought it was maybe like Armando Galarraga or someone like that, somebody who was just kind of a fringe guy. But if not for Ryan Dempster turning down that trade to the Braves, you know, you don't end up with Kyle Hendricks. So some of that stuff ended up just being blind luck. And on the other side of it, you have one of Theo's very first moves, which was to pick up Ian Stewart from the Colorado Rockies because he needed a third baseman. But who did he trade him? DJ LeMahieu. And
he was like a throw-in on that deal because they sent Tyler Colvin originally in that deal, didn't they, too, as well?
Oh, yeah. Was Tyler Colvin involved in that? Yeah, he may have been. I don't remember. I have to look that one up.
I'll look it up.
Yeah,
it's
that's a long time ago at this point. But, yeah, I just remember, that trade. Yeah. It was him and DJ LeMahieu for Ian Stewart. And Ian Stewart at that time, you know, say what you want about him as a person. We didn't really know a lot of that. Ian Stewart was coming off an awful season, but the years before that, you know, he was never a high average hitter, but he got on, you know, a decent walk rate, a good enough walk rate. He had a little bit of power. He could play third base. They needed a third baseman in 2012, at least a stopgap guy, until you got either Javier Baez up to the big leagues or, you know, eventually Chris Bryant, who would be drafted. They needed somebody. to play third base. Mm-hmm. In retrospect, probably could have just been DJ LeMahieu. But, you know, LeMahieu at that time was not like a top prospect. Nobody knew what he was going to be. But still, it was one of Theo's very first moves, and it was a major blunder. You know, I'm looking at the date. December 8th, 2011 was that move. So yeah. It had to have been like his very first thing that he did was to trade Tyler Colvin and DJ LeMahieu for Ian Stewart. And
yeah,
to his credit, Tyler Colvin didn't do much the rest of his career, but he did have a really good 2012 with the Rockies, far better than anything Ian Stewart did. So, yeah.
Yeah.
A big frustrating move.
Plus he was a douche. I think the other move I think of, and these were all pretty early on in the Epstein era a little bit, with the Edwin Jackson signing was tough. And that just still to this day bums me out, because I would watch Edwin Jackson maybe a couple of years ago and was like, man, this guy doesn't look so bad. Or like, obviously he had that, like, what was like 143 pitch no hitter that he had, that he like walked mm-hmm. six batters and gave up two runs or something like that. But man, he just looks so bad as a Cub. And I thought that was a great move. I was happy with it when they signed him.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. And I've heard nothing but good things about him as a person and nothing but good things about him as a teammate and a guy who owned a lot of the bad stuff that happened on the mound. Well, you know, he never shied away from tough questions. So don't take this as a indictment of him as a person. But the guy made it to the big leagues in 2003 as a 19-year-old. So that tells you right away, you know, some of the development may have been lacking. He made it to the big leagues 2003 and pitched through 2019. So that's a 17-year career. But take a stab at what the longest he was, the most amount of years he pitched with any one team was.
I would say 3 years with the Tigers.
3 years with the Cubs, the Dodgers, and the Tampa Bay Rays. That's it. And those 3 years with the Dodgers were over the course of 75 innings because he was first up with the big leagues with them. He never stuck around in one spot. So think about all the different voices in his ears about, you know, when you're constantly moving. I mean, we could go down the list. 3 years with the Rays, Dodgers, and Cubs, 2 years with the Nats, 2 years with the Tigers, two with the White Sox, and then one with the Diamondbacks, Braves, Cardinals, A's, Padres, Orioles, Marlins, and Blue Jays. Like, that guy got messed with so much over the course of his career. He had really good stuff and could have been a very good pitcher, and he had some very good years. But, yeah, that you're right, that signing with the Cubs, the most frustrating part about it was it never made any sense for him to be as bad as he was.
Right.
It just didn't make any sense. The stuff, the ability, the work ethic, it was all there. He just, the numbers for whatever reason while he was with the Cubs were awful.
Yeah. It makes absolutely no sense to me, and I would have loved to see him figure it out because he was a cool guy, but it is what it is. I guess you live and learn, but those are probably the two biggest moves I know for sure that bothered me. Was there anything else you wanted to throw out there, Ryan?
I mean, people can make arguments on a lot of different moves that they were the worst. Mm-hmm. Sorry. And you could look at the Jose Quintana trade and how it worked out. I was a big defender of that trade early on because I thought it made sense, even though you knew you were giving up a lot in Eloy Jimenez and Dylan Cease. But that one I think probably stands out, and it's that one's heavily retrospect, like DJ LeMahieu and like Edwin Jackson, you know, moves that made sense at the time, and then looking back on it, it's pretty awful. So that one you have to hold up there as a bad trade. You could even probably make an argument that the trade that they made to get Justin Wilson and Alex Avila, that one involved a prospect named Isaac Paredes, a guy that I actually saw play when he was in A-ball, and a guy that I thought, and a lot of people thought, was going to be a really good player And I think he may have made it to the big leagues this year.
He did. Yeah. 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 He hit a double off the Cubs, I think, and a home run.
Did he really? Wow.
Yeah.
I did not realize that. Yeah. He had one home run this year. So if it was against the Cubs, that's his only big league home run. His stat line in the big leagues, not real good in about 100 at bats, but he's 21 years old. They moved him to third base exclusively, I think. But he was a shortstop when he was with the Cubs. A guy with a lot of, he's like, I remember at the time, my take on him and what some prospect evaluators had said was, this is a guy who's probably going to be a third baseman. He's probably going to be a 20 home run guy, but not a ton more power. He's not going to hit like 35, 40 homers, but he's going to hit a lot of doubles, and he's going to play good defense. He's going to be a good player. And they traded him for a year and a half of the Justin Wilson experience and that half season of Alex Avila because Wilson Contreras got injured. So that's one that I think probably is a little bit underrated on that cringe list. But again, 2017, they're coming off the World Series. You're trying to shore up your bullpen and get a catcher who's a decent level while Contreras is injured to kind of make your way towards the postseason and build up that run for another, you know, maybe shot at a World Series. And they were having a good second half that year. So, understandable why that trade was made. But in retrospect, because it didn't, you know, end up in anything but an NLCS appearance, it's going to look bad long term.
Yeah. And that's a deal, too, where if Justin Wilson is even just like pretty okay, that deal looks a million times better because then you have a power lefty in your bullpen. But, you know, it didn't happen.
and that's the hard part about it is like the Quintana deal, Justin Wilson, for whatever reason, kind of fell apart by the time he got to the Cubs. When they acquired him, he had a 2.68 ERA with 12 strikeouts per nine and less than four walks per nine with the Tigers in 2017. And then he couldn't stop walking people. And then in 2018, he walked a little bit more normal, but still too many. And was decent, but not exactly what you thought he was going to be. And then, sure enough, 2019, he signs with the Mets. He was injured that year a little bit, but 2.54 ERA. His walks were back down around 4.5. I mean, it just seemed like for the year and a half that he was with the Cubs, it really stood out above his, you know, normal career performance. It was very outside of that scope. And just seems just such an odd thing to happen. Again, another kind of unfortunate for the Cubs.
Yeah, those two moves, especially the Jose Quintana deal, is the one that I think everyone will look at and say like, "Wow, they really messed this one up." And in the moment, it wasn't everyone's favorite deal, but it made sense, like you said. Now we look back at it, and it's like, man, yeah, this kind of sucks. But especially now that we know Justin Verlander did want to come to the Cubs, and that could have been a deal that happened too. So that aspect of it hurts as well. But at the same time, too, like for what Quintana was, like it's more so what you gave up about or gave up for him than it is really what he was. You just overpaid for a guy that's probably a fourth or fifth guy, and you paid probably top of the line starter money for him, and he was just never really that guy. So
yeah, the other guy that we should mention in that Justin Wilson Alex Avila trade, it was Jamer Candelario, a guy who a lot of people had high hopes for, and then he wasn't great in his first couple years with the Tigers, but in 2020, again, a short season, he only had 206 plate appearances, but he played pretty much every day for the Tigers, hit 297, 369 on base, over 500 slugging, hit seven home runs with 11 doubles and three triples. So Jamer Candelario had a good 2020, even though it was a shortened season. And that's another guy that he's 26 years old, would have looked really good in a Cubs uniform long term. Obviously, the fit wasn't necessarily there because he's a corner infielder, but, a guy you had. You knew you were going to have to trade. You wanted to get something for, and all you really got was Justin Wilson and a half season of Alex Avila. It's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, no, that sucked. that trade all around was just a bummer, especially because those were two prospects. Like, people probably don't really, I mean, you and I know who they are, and we knew who they were before that trade, but there probably wasn't a ton of people sitting there being like, oh man, not Jaime Candelario. But now you look now and it's like, yeah, that could have been. I mean, it's an upgraded bat over David Bode, maybe not a better glove, but you know, that's right. A much better bat. It's a good piece that you could have. That's a starting caliber player. So
right, and I don't know a ton about the Tigers, but I assume they're going into 2021 thinking Candelario is probably their regular first baseman at this point, and
yeah.
Isaac Paredes may be their regular third baseman, so that they could be solving that corner infield spot for a few years with those guys. And you know, again, not to harp on it, but all the Cubs got was Justin Wilson and Alex Avila.
Right. And at the very least, like, those are two cost controlled, relatively inexpensive players that are producing pretty well on a team that obviously not competing for anything, but played a lot better than people gave them credit for initially. You know, I'll buy shortened season, as we always talk about in 2020, but yeah, you know, Tigers weren't necessarily awful. They did beat the Cubs that one series in Detroit, taking 3-4. So,
and if you look at their regular players, guys who played at least 40 games this year, Jamer mm-hmm. Candelario was their best hitter. So that kind of,
yeah,
that stings a little bit.
It's always a sad day when you lose, someone to your roster, your core, whatever it is, a manager, someone that clearly helped build something here with you and your team. And obviously the Cubs are forever different because of Theo Epstein, and the feeling of being a Cubs fan is slightly different now because you've won that championship. I guess now Cubs fans will be able to hit Theo Epstein up for beer though, until Jed Hoyer brings a trophy to the North Side. So
yeah, that's close, I'm holding on to that one.
Yeah, he said he's gonna. He I know he lives somewhere around in the city. He said he's gonna stay in Chicago. Maybe we can. Maybe we can run into him. He'll probably be wearing a fake mustache or something though. So.
But. Yeah, well, I found it funny that he was saying that he was gonna get Cubs season tickets, and then later he said that when he runs into Cubs fans out at the bar, beers are on him, and I'm just like, that's dangerous. If you're going to spend your time at Wrigley Field and telling people that beer's
right
on you, that means beer's on you for 40,000 fans as soon as it's, you know, safe enough for there to be 40,000 fans.
Right. Yeah. It's good luck, man. Cubs fans won't turn down beer.
Right. He'll probably he'll be wearing the Groucho Marx disguise in the outfield.
Oh man. But, I mean, I guess, There's not much more to really say other than it's sad to see a guy like Epstein go, but like you said, there's still things to look forward to. And I've kind of teeter-tottered back and forth between being sad that someone like Chris Bryant or Javi Baez could be gone because of, you know, what's happened now, or, you know, that also too, that the Cubs do have exciting guys like Ed Howard and Miguel Amaya, and mm-hmm. there's pitching prospects like Braylon Marquez who are coming up. There's still things to look forward to with this team. And I'm excited to hear more about those guys, especially because we really just didn't get much on them besides the guys that were in that satellite, you know, area in South Bend for the Cubs this year. But there's still things to look forward to with this team, even if you think without Theo Epstein, they're kind of doomed. And I don't think that's necessarily the case, but I think it's important that you set up Hoyer with people that are going to be able to give fresh ideas and thoughts and new eyes to a situation that hasn't really changed over the last 5 years.
Yeah, I agree with that. If they are going to be forced to go in this direction, where they kind of revamp and build towards the next contender and acknowledge that maybe what they're going to put on the field in 2021 won't be a true World Series contender. If that is that direction that they have to go, I think this is the right thing to do. I think it's good for to not have the same exact people who've been overseeing the team the last 3 years, you know, kind of doing business as usual, not having those people trying to set up the next Cubs contender and then walk out the door. So I think if you're going to go with Jed, that's great. If that's who you're confident in, you put him in that role, let him hire somebody from outside, hire a few people from the outside would be great, to let him have those different eyes, those different voices. You know, try and poach some guys from teams like the Rays or the Dodgers, that, you know, that would be great. Bring in some of those people who can, you know, update the Cubs on a little bit of what other teams are doing, that would be fantastic. So I think there is optimism in that, you know, maybe if we're accepting that 2021 won't be the Cubs year for the next World Series winner, that there is at least a reason to hang on to optimism and say, but long term, maybe they're going to build something else, you know, another 5 or 6 year window that we can be proud of.
Right. Exactly. There's still things to look forward to, things to be excited about. And like you said, that hopefully this team doesn't just outright sell every single piece, but I would be surprised if there weren't some pretty well-known fan favorite faces on this team still for 2021 and further. So,
right. But, yeah. A lot of these guys, even though they're, you know, inching closer to free agency, they're still guys not making that much money. I don't think Wilson Contreras is going to be making a ton of money. I would be very surprised if he's traded. Yu Darvish, another example of it would surprise me a lot if he's traded at this point, but I wouldn't rule it out as much today as I would have 3 days ago. So
right.
There's going to be some turnover, but you'll still see, you know, if you're a fan of this team as it's constructed, I don't think guys like Ian Happ and Wilson Contreras, I would be surprised if they were going anywhere. Kyle Hendricks, I sincerely doubt he's going anywhere.
No. So, but with that, that'll do it here for today's episode of Locked On Cubs. Ryan, thanks for coming on the show. I know it's been a busy couple weeks with you. Congrats on the sale of the house, and I'm sure
that's
been a nightmare in itself too, but hopefully
I could tell you.
Yeah.
I won't bore everyone. I'll save it for off the air.
That will do it here for today's episode of Locked On Cubs. Make sure if you have not, you are subscribed to Locked On Cubs and whatever podcast app you use. Make sure to leave a 5-star review. And make sure you're also following us on Twitter at Locked On Cubs. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean R. Sears. Follow Ryan on Twitter at Ryan Q. Davis. And make sure you check out tomorrow's episode with Tony Andracki from Marquee Sports as we get his thoughts on Theo's exit and what he thinks maybe the direction this Cubs team could be going towards in 2021 and further. But with that, thanks for sticking around, guys. You enjoy the rest of your day. I hope you're staying safe through this craziness that's happening here in Chicago as we deal with another COVID wave. Hopefully you're wearing masks. Hopefully you're trying to stay safe. Please don't take that as a political statement. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. And as always, go Cubs.